This is Sci-Fi Talk, the podcast on how science fiction, horror, fantasy, and comics help us explore our humanity.
This is Justin Wellborn from The Signal, and you're listening to Sci-Fi Talk.
Hi, this is Tony Tolato, and welcome to Sci-Fi Talk, as we have actor A.J. Bowen, who plays Lewis in the new film The Signal. He's appeared in Creepshow 3 in the radio segment, and will be starring in the upcoming film House of the Devil. We talk about The Signal and its implications, plus working with the film's directors, David Bruckner, Dan Bush, and Jacob Gentry. Here's my conversation with A.J. Bowen.
Actually, I just spoke to Justin just a little while ago.
Oh, my apologies.
And he said some good things about you, man.
He's well paid.
I've been very lucky to have gotten some clips from the film, and actually that's going to be featured on my website, as a matter of fact, including a great scene that you're in. I'll tell you, your character, man, that is one twisted guy. I mean, that must have been a hoot to play it, but in this one scene, and the clip is called Laura, and it's
cool.
You go from a comedy to dark comedy to just plain horror, all in that one scene. That was just an amazing scene.
Thank you.
I got to ask you guys, you're in it with Scott and Sherry, and they were both terrific in it too. Was there a lot of rehearsal for that particular scene, or was this done on the fly pretty much?
The whole movie, we took very little time to shoot, but one of the benefits that we had was a pre-established relationship with each other.
Right.
And, Scott and I went to high school together.
Oh, there you go.
We've known each other a very long time, and all three of us went to the University of Georgia, as well as the director of that segment, Jacob. And we spent, I think 2 days banging out most of the middle part, kind of pre-blocking it. We all did this thing before we shot, and I'm sure that they spoke to you about it, called Signal Boot Camp.
Yes.
It was incredibly beneficial for us. We got to get together and sort of refine the script and really develop the relationships. And I think that scene was certainly helped by it. At the time, we didn't have to worry about trying to approach, what I mean to say is, as it was written, it was a fairly Blake Edwards type. Blake Edwards in the apocalypse.
Yes, exactly.
And our background, I think all three of us, so definitely mine and Scott's, our background is in comedy.
Oh, there you go.
So it was an opportunity to really play. And so in that respect, it was just a blast. It was a joy. It was pretty planned out, but if you plan well enough, you don't have to, you can allow things to sort of naturally occur that are sweet. Example being that we knew that there was a part of the film. We knew that there were pretzels on a table, and we knew that we were supposed to eat. It wasn't written the way that it was planned, but that just kind of happened.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of pre-planning and then allowing to riff on that. So
Sci-Fi Talk returns in a moment.
I love when you both try to, or are going to go for the pretzels, and then you catch each other and you stop. And
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's a cool moment. I love that. I love stuff like that.
It's, a big part of that, and I have to give credit to Jacob on that. He was really interested in how human beings handle etiquette, especially at the time of the apocalypse. How do you maintain societal norms? And that's something that I think can be hysterically funny. And it also helps when things do, unfortunately, get very, very serious there. Hopefully the point being that the audience is very invested by that point in time and are closer, feel closer to the characters than they would have if there hadn't have been some moments that were fairly lighthearted.
Well, I mean, Sherry's character is essentially wants to give a New Year's Eve party when everything is literally falling apart. You guys are literally, there's this one scene where the clip begins when you're looking into a van. And then this guy literally runs behind you with a chainsaw. I mean, it's just part of the madness that's going on around you. And she's dressed and, wearing a nice sweater and a string of pearls and just as if everything is normal, but obviously they aren't. So that's really cool. In your character, I mean, you seem to develop something with him. I mean, the whole thing, he carries, his exterminator can. He's got his overalls with his name, like any good exterminator. And, right. You know, that's more than a prop to you. I mean, it's obviously part of who he is.
Right, absolutely. Jacob and I were really interested, I cringe a little when I say this, but for lack of a better word or a better role, Lewis, I suppose represents the human villain, of the traditional villain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we very much did not want to approach him that way. We want to approach him as much of a multidimensional human being as was possible. And so to that end, Jacob and I also thought that it was imperative to try to make the guy as iconic as possible. We spent hours, we're geeks, so we spent hours discussing whether or not Lewis tucked in the shirt or left it untucked.
Mm.
When did the sleeves roll up? When do the sleeves roll up? How long does he wear his jacket? Being readers of comics, graphic novels, I think that we thought that it would aid our cause if we tried to make as indelible of a human being as possible. That looks exactly like the person and is not as little of a facsimile as we could.
There's more Sci-Fi Talk, so stick with it.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Hi, this is Virginia Hay. I play Zan in Basket, and you're listening to Sci-Fi Talk. Goddess be with you.
I liked his arc in just that one clip alone. It was just amazing how he just literally went and turned on a dime, and then by the end of the clip, you're left sitting there literally going, whoa. I mean, he just really turns it on, and people will see it. I urge everybody to, to watch it, after this interview is done on my website, because it's going to be there, and it's just really worth seeing and really shows you kind of what the potential of this movie and what The Signal actually does to go from, dark comedy to plain horror. It's just really amazing to incorporate that literally in just that one scene alone.
Thank you.
It just seems like The Signal affects, I was talking this to Justin about this, The Signal affects everyone differently. So it's not, everyone does not have the same reaction to it.
Right. An interesting thing that we were able to kind of play with was, since it's a perspective film to begin with, you never can be sure. We never have an omniscient third person narrating the story. So you just can't be sure if what you're seeing is completely legitimate, or if it's biased or tainted by someone who has been experiencing the signal.
Mm-hmm.
Showing for instance, there's a part in the movie where Ben, the heroic character,
yes,
sees what it is that he would be doing, and that informs his choices. I think that one of the most interesting things is the signal doesn't necessarily make someone just turn around and kill someone or commit an act of violence, just as likely makes them preemptively assert their safety in really unsavory fashions, because you don't know if the person looking at the signal that's in front of you is incredibly crazy and is prone to violence and is going to attack you. And
mm-hmm.
I think playing with the idea of justification for violence and when that occurs and how different people can come to that conclusion that that's necessary is something that was a conversation that was definitely had.
It just seems to me, from what I've seen so far, is that the signal, the concept of it is really an interesting way to examine madness and how different people go insane. and what really is madness? Because there's a lot of clinical things that we know about it and stuff, but to see it, to kind of examine it in this way, kind of breaks down a little bit how different people kind of, you know, have their crazy side and what happens when the sanity and the control is removed, and that's kind of interesting.
Absolutely. I'm fascinated by the idea that everyone is the hero of their own story.
Yeah, yeah.
That can't possibly be the case in the greatest sense of the word, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, on a very hyper-extended level, our film deals with that a little bit. The notion of who can determine, who determines sanity and what is accepted and what will people do rationally, mm-hmm. that to everyone else is an incredibly insane gesture.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's really cool. That's what's appealing to me is how insanity affects different people and what, you know, it's almost like people seem to create their own little worlds and like even Lewis and the things that he does in his mind, he's right, you know? And even in that scene that we saw, he saw something and he thought he saw it one way. So if he's the only one seeing it that way, but to him it seemed correct.
I think that's a more interesting angle to take with someone that's sort of descending into madness than cheapening the human element to it and just allowing them to sort of gleefully, absurdly, and grotesquely commit acts of violence. I think that was a sort of our answer to the suggestion of you know, the really exhausted torture porn.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Because it's really easy to write somebody off and diffuse the impact of violence, but if they're a real thinking person and they think that what they're doing is protecting someone else, if they think that they're justified in doing all sorts of horrible things for the greater good, you know, who determines that? And at what point do the means no longer justify the ends?
There's also, as an actor, what's got to be liberating, and even people that play villains, it's just like they pretty much are, you know, you kind of work without any rules, really, that we all normally have to sort of survive together. So that must have been kind of wild as an actor to play.
It was great. It was a lot of fun, especially to take what we're talking about in Act Two, for example. And it's this guy that doesn't understand exactly what's going on, thinks he knows what's happening, and is trying to maintain some sort of decorum and some sort of he's trying to go with the flow, and it just keeps not working for him. It becomes increasingly difficult for him to sit on a couch and have share a cocktail with a complete stranger.
Yeah, I mean even in the scene where the clip is called Laura, you know, that's what they're trying to have a party and trying to maintain normalcy, and it's really impossible. It just can't be done because of all the things that are going on.
Right.
Yeah, it was cool. It was really cool. I like that part of it. The makeup part of it. I mean, there is blood. So,
yeah.
So what was your blood experience like?
Intensive. I spent an awful lot of time doing that. I was stained for the better part of a month after we got done shooting. Mm-hmm. That stuff doesn't just wash off. There's blood continuity, you know. So we would, because we're a low budget production, we would have to shoot out each location at a time.
Yeah.
And so that meant sometimes doing three different perspectives of the same action.
Right.
Almost a Rashomon style.
Yeah.
In that respect, the blood became an incredible nightmare, because when you're doing things that are happening in Act One, and then some injuries have occurred, and you have to jump in and do Act Three, and then jump back and do Act Two, figuring out where all the bloody spots were became a bit arduous. it does help, though, with performance, obviously, to get covered in sweat. Get covered in a disgusting film of baby oil and fake blood, and then told, you know, get in there, do it.
I once had a beard, so I know what it's like. I mean, I know that any kind of foreign sauce or substance in your beard can be a nightmare. How did you handle that part of it?
Grooming was very much a full-time job during shooting the film. The worst part for me, there's a moment where Lewis was duct taped to a chair, and there was duct tape completely covering his face, and someone had to rip the duct tape off.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just no way getting around that.
Ooh.
When it's time to shoot it, you know. Independent film might not be glamorous, but you know, for all of us that couldn't letter in a varsity sport or anything, it's our chance to sort of be as masculine as possible, even though if that means me freaking out about my beard being ripped off by eighth or ninth take of having the duct tape pulled from my mouth.
That's great. And it also, from what Justin told me, the signal actually arrives in like three different waves. It's not just one wave.
Right. It's more or less all forms of transferable communication.
Mm.
It's not going to come through a CD player. That's a closed circuit. But
okay.
You know, basically stems from the idea of we're such a media saturated society. And not to make a statement one way or another about the merits or adverse effects of that, but it's everywhere. We were in New York a few days ago in a cab to promote the film, and there's a TV screen inside the cab.
Yeah, I know.
Back seat. And I think that Price has developed some technology to have advertising logos inside shirts, you know, electronic advertising. There's so many things around us, news and talking heads. What happens if something comes through all of that, you know, TV, radio, phone, and I guess the question is, do you turn it off? When do you turn it off? That's more or less the signal sort of arrives with a bang on New Year's Eve and is in every form of communication device possible.
Wow, that's amazing.
There's more Sci-Fi Talk, so stay tuned.
I heard that you shot this in Atlanta.
Yes.
How long was the shoot, especially, you know, for your part?
Well, I was there almost the entire time.
Oh, wow, good.
I was in a majority of the film.
Okay.
We shot, I think, principal photography was 12 or 13 days. It was very short. And then there were some pickup dates here and there that I wasn't around for. But that was, principal photography, I would say, no more than 2 weeks. Some very long days, you know.
Have you seen the film in its entirety already?
Oh, too many times. I can so see where it's headed. Nothing surprises me about the film anymore. We've had the good fortune of getting to travel with it the last year. I've got to see it play at Sundance.
Oh, that's great, yeah.
South by Southwest, Gen Art in New York. We played it at the Sitges Film Festival in Spain, in Atlanta, and so many places, and we've been really fortunate to have audiences respond pretty positively to it, you know, for something that we weren't really aware that anyone was ever going to see it outside of our family when we shot it. It's been a humbling experience for us.
That's awesome.
We're actually, in about 10 minutes, about to premiere the movie and do the Atlanta premiere since we...
Oh, great.
Tomorrow, yeah, so it's very exciting. A lot of our families are going to be seeing it in a few minutes for the very first time. So
oh, that's awesome.
It'll either be disowned or congratulated.
From what I've seen, I think you'll get some congratulations, no doubt about it.
I hope so.
Yeah, you do a good job. I mean, from what I've seen, that one scene, man, it was just like, hey, this they know what they're doing in this one. I mean, it's really, low budget doesn't need to mean that the acting is bad and that the script is bad. You know, it doesn't need to equal that. And unfortunately, it has in the past, but that doesn't necessarily mean, it's not in this case. You know?
I think that logically it should really be the opposite, because
mm-hmm.
when there's a lot of money involved, the studios or people have to be very concerned with getting a return on their investment, and a big one at that. And so decisions are made financially instead of creatively.
Yeah,
And I don't think that services story at all.
Mm-hmm. You went to University of Georgia, and
yeah.
it just seems to me lately, starting with Greg Bishop last year, who's another great filmmaker. Yeah, it just seems like there's an interesting group that's developing down there and really kind of making their claim, you know, especially in these type genres. So it has my attention, and I'm watching it very closely. So I was not surprised because Greg kind of tuned me into that world that this is going on. I mean, it's just like you're all kind of coming around at the same time, which really makes it unique.
We've all known each other for so long, too. You know, several of us grew up together. And I think that's a testament to the sensibility of the artistic scene in Atlanta. I was less a part of it. I was more a part of it at the university level, and then I went to New York for a while. and I also went to, I live in Los Angeles now. Mm-hmm. I came back to shoot the movie, but there's definitely a punk rock kind of communal sentiment about the crafting of stories, especially film-based ones in Atlanta. It's nice to see everybody getting the opportunity to sort of share that together mm-hmm. and go off and do their own things and then reconvene. It's lovely.
Well, it sounds like you're walking in, so I don't want to take up much more of your time, but can you talk about House of the Devil that you're going to be in? I know that's...
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, as soon as I get done here, I've got to run back home for a second, and then I'm out to Connecticut.
Cool.
My friend Ty wrote this movie. It sort of deals with the paranoia that was all over the place in the 80s with satanic cult.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What if this one presupposes, what if all of that sort of fanaticism, what if it was rooted in reality? What if that was legitimate? And I'm going to be playing a guy in it that... Mm-hmm. Sort of makes my character in Signal look like a humanitarian.
So. I'm very
excited about it.
So you get to push yourself another notch up,
right?
Or
right.
Down, I guess, if you depending on how you look at it, you know. But that sounds great. That sounds really cool.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, it should be nice.
So is it? So it takes place in the 80s.
Yes, it's a period of 1987.
Oh, that should be fun with the clothes and the music and all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
That's great. That's great. Hey, I really want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Oh, man, pleasure's all mine.
And, you know, I'm just really, in the last year, it just seems like I've been talking to a lot of great young people that are doing some great indie stuff. And, I mean, the horror genre, the sci-fi genre has really gotten a big boost from it. And there's a lot of great things, and the buzz on this one is really good, and from what I've seen, I've really been impressed with it, too. So,
well, I hope we don't let you down.
No, I don't think you will. I mean, from what I've seen, I like it, and you know, my site, scifitalk.com, will have the clips and the trailer, and there's a nice little featurette that you're interviewed on as well that people can see. So I certainly hope that people can stop by and watch those things and then listen to this podcast and also Justin's podcast as well.
Thank you so much for talking with us, man.
Okay, well, it sounds like based on what you're doing, we'll be talking again.
I hope so.
All right, man.
Very special thank you to Magnolia Pictures. Visit scifitalk.com. Every other day there'll be a rotation where you can watch a clip from the movie and also a behind-the-scenes featurette. That's at scifitalk.com. Until the very next time, this is Tony Tolato. Thanks so much for listening.